This is Fix It. I'm Kevin.
And I'm Nishant. Today, we're fixing the environmental footprint of the food and beverage industry with Jordan Schenk.
A glance at Jordan's resume reveals that she's done some impossible work. Pardon the horrible pun, listeners. But she headed up marketing at Impossible Foods for 3 years. In that time, the company fed over 2.5 million people per month and hit the $1 billion valuation mark. Now she's leading the plant-based food and beverage industry from another spot, as the co-founder and CMO of Sunwink, an all-natural, organically sourced herbal tonic beverage that uses no flavor additives, hormones, pesticides, or refined sugars.
We should also point out that Jordan, much like us, is a proud alum of Southridge High School in Beaverton, Oregon. Thanks so much for joining us, Jordan.
Thank you for having me. It's pretty crazy to hear your high school brought up in a podcast and to be on with people who went to your high school.
Why don't we talk a little bit about why there is such an issue with sustainability when it comes to the food and beverage industry?
That's a very big question that a lot of very, very, very smart people, I would say, within the past more so 5 to 8 years have really tried to solve. You know, there's a, like I had sort of told you guys leading into this, there's a few different camps that exist within food and beverage right now. One of those camps being this sort of realm of the plant-based meats and dairies. You've got another group of people who are really thinking about like corporate social responsibility and how do you create, you know, I would say regenerative companies that are solely based on give back. And there's probably a third camp out there that's even more extreme on those, which is just how do you, from I would say a supply chain standpoint, develop ingredients that are unmodified, unaltered, and all three of those are sort of vying for a place at what it means to sort of turn the industry around. And if you unpack all three of those effectively, you know, we've gotten to this place because of three different trends. One trend is, you know, rampant demand around products, whether that's meat or dairy, that are incredibly wasteful and taxing on the environment. You know, the other part of the corporate social responsibility, we let rampant growth in a CPG industry not put into place the considerations around not only, you know, the human beings that are creating those products all the way through to the communities that the products support, whether that's, you know, LGBTQ, people of color, again, and that representation within the farming community as well. On the far other side of that, you've got the whole push towards non-human intervention or non-science intervention with creating a more, I would say, clean and natural, by way of their definition, supply chain. So there's a whole lot of stuff going on when it in the sustainability world or sort of the impact world of food.
So I think you're pointing out something pretty important here for our listeners, which is given the multifaceted nature of the problem, there's undoubtedly so many different stakeholders that have opinions that want to be heard here. And I can clearly start to see why this might be a tricky issue to solve. Could you maybe lay out a few of the explicit reasons why it's been tough to get the food and beverage industry to reduce its environmental footprint over time?
Yeah, I think the reality is that it's a problem that won't be necessarily re-engineered solely from the supply chain or solely from, you know, I would say the efforts of the industry or corporations. The reality is that consumer demand and consumer behavior needs to change drastically. And to re-engineer that is probably the most challenging of them all. I think what we've seen mostly happen in the food industry is that, you know, companies pretty much innovated and created according to what would either be incredibly delicious and tasty or insanely addictive, and adding, you know, different components to the food to make sure that either of those really hit the spec. And that naturally changed the way that people think about food and ultimately what they demand. So if you take the work of Impossible, for example, you know, our challenge wasn't that you know, the company had made this incredible product. It was actually, how do you get people to actually want that product and to ultimately get around the thoughts they had around what it meant for something to be made from plants or for something to be made better? And so that challenge alone is sort of the greatest one that everyone faces. And I'm sure, as all of us know, as smart business people, without that demand or without that sort of clear indicator that there's a market there, it's really hard to get the industry overall to make some big shift.
And what's striking to me is that companies that are taking this more sustainable approach to the food and beverage industry, as you pointed out, are facing two headwinds, right? The first is just being successful as a business alone and creating that demand like you're talking about. But the second is going about it in a way that's usually, I'd assume, more costly as well as harder to convince people to think of that product as something they want to consume, right? Whether you're talking to your grandparent who's never heard of plant-based meat, or talking to someone who does just love drinking a Coca-Cola instead of a kombucha, there's kind of that factor of just convincing folks to go about addressing the unknown. So I wonder, how is Sunwink specifically trying to adjust consumers' preferences and get them to celebrate going about their diets in a more sustainable approach?
Yeah, this is actually a very relevant topic for us as a business. You know, we launched officially about a year ago, and I think we've really been having a lot of fun enjoying this sort of nascent demand that's out there. And we're now at this really exciting precipice as we go national and as we scale the business to start thinking about, like, okay, well, really, how do we start getting people in the headspace of, you know, what it means to consume plants for their, more so their power and their properties that they have to impact your overall health and wellness, less so much about, like, how do I, you know, find sustenance or how do I find flavor? And so something that, you know, we've really been talking a lot about is just, how do we start to find those cues of familiarity? Like, if you talk to most Americans and you say, like, the word rosemary, most people usually think, like, rosemary chicken. Like, they actually don't think that rosemary itself is actually, you know, an incredible circulatory herb. It can be used for anything from, like, recovery all the way through to complementary sort of components to if you're consuming turmeric, which is a great anti-inflammatory, and that actually a lot of these things that sit comfortably on your grocery shelf are a lot more powerful or have greater stories than have effectively been told. So for us, we're right on the cusp of starting to push that narrative out further, but really starting from a place of what people know and how they know a lot of these ingredients and starting to layer on, actually, there's a lot more here. And I think we saw something really similar back probably in the early 2000s or 90s, just around, like, if you remember, like, the whole thing around blueberries and the whole thing around kale. And it was like, actually, kale mostly back in the day was used to garnish, like, meat counters. Like, you would look at a meat counter and it was like the, like, considered sort of like the unsexy leaf. And then all of a sudden everyone was like, it has all of these incredible properties. We're at a very, very similar space with a lot of these sort of smaller, more forgotten ingredients, which are your herbs. So that's how we've started to approach it. And we've got a lot ahead of us to figure out how we start to tell those stories in a more palatable way.
You know, we like to think that our listeners are very savvy individuals, but most of them may not work as supply chain experts or as folks in the food manufacturing business. So as maybe just savvy consumers, can you talk to us a little bit about what our Fixer community can do with a few aspects of their lives? Maybe first, to start, what they could do with their spare time to learn about this issue, and second, what they could do with their money to spend more wisely.
Definitely. I guess, you know, so one, a few things, actually, like, a few different, I would say, books came to mind. One of the first books back in the day that I read, actually, when thinking about our food system and how sort of we've been conditioned to eat food a certain way was actually reading, you know, The Omnivore's Dilemma by Michael Pollan. He has this really beautiful quote in there specifically just around, he says something else to the extent of like, eat food, not too much, mostly plants. And that was like the thesis of the entire book, is that we've really been conditioned to think about protein and micronutrients in this way that's incredibly dependent upon things like meat, when actually the plant world has so much more efficacy behind it. And that's, again, when I think about this in the context of Sunwink and herbs, these things that have been sitting on your shelf that you think of as just a spice or a garnish are actually these incredible, powerful, effectively beings that have been here well before humans existed and will be here long after. That book itself was actually a really great introduction into just, I would say, more of the consciousness around it. I think some of the stuff to stay away from when you're trying to really lean into understanding sustainability sort of on your like path to education is going sort of too far into the poles, like the polarity of everything. There's a lot of really big opinions because as a multi-trillion dollar industry, there's going to be a lot of really big opinions. So staying away from pieces where you can tell it's, you know, people are really pointing fingers or pointing blame. I think at the end of the day, we're all human beings and we all got here because human beings love to eat tasty things. And I've always found it to be a lot better to focus more, again, on that literature that focuses on how do we change the behavior, how do we rethink about what we're consuming versus like, we're going to burn this all to the ground. And you can usually tell those articles when you see them. But that's sort of my first introduction. It was written in 2007 and it's just a great place to start.
Well, that's a great starting point, and hopefully our listeners will dive right into that book and begin to reconceptualize what sort of tasty things they should be eating. But Jordan, thanks so much for joining us today.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks again to Jordan for tuning in to the Fix It cast. And to all our listeners, please use #Fixer to tell us how you're solving problems in your community. You can tweet us at @fix_cast. And please, Nishant's a very sensitive person, and he hasn't received as many 5-star reviews as he'd like. So please help Nishant be a happier, more smiley guy, because I have to spend a lot of time with him. Anyway, Fixers, you're tired of me, you're tired of this recording. Go have a great day, and we'll see you next time.